Hello and welcome to episode number 57 here on the Darling and Darling podcast. This is Tim, with me is Simi, and today we are going to explore the topic of happiness and how to manage to be happy. So Simi, do you want to start with just naming a few aspects that come to mind when you think about what makes you happy?
Hobbies make me happy. Nature makes me happy. People I like make me happy. You make me happy. Good weather makes me happy. Sometimes bad weather makes me happy. I will give it back to you. Otherwise, we talk like I'm in a monologue for 2 hours. Be like, that makes me happy, and that makes me happy, and that, you know. So.
Okay, that's really interesting. Are there so many things that make you happy that you could just name them for 2 hours?
I think so, because then I go, you know, then I go over the broad things and then I'm like, oh, hobbies make me happy. What hobbies do I have? And then, you know, at some point I'm just naming books I read that make me happy. Or like, you know, experiences I had that make me happy. When I think about them, stuff like that, but I could go on for hours, I think.
Okay, that's actually really interesting, because I think most people struggle more in the other direction, that they lack things that make them happy. So I'm happy for you that you have so many things that make you happy. And I think for that episode, we should stay in that broader categories. Because if reading, for example, is something that makes you happy, then that's something that we can learn from you and people can learn from you and they can adopt that. But probably we shouldn't slip into giving book recommendations for ours, because they will probably figure out some books that they want to read.
Yeah, that's why I said I give it back to you. Otherwise, we, you know... At some point, we come to that moment.
Okay, the few categories you named, with like loved ones, hobbies, you said nature, you said, do you think we can generalize that? That's that something every human being needs to be happy, or that makes every human being happy? Or do you think that's something specific to you?
No, I think it's something, I mean, every person needs someone to love. It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship, you know, but I think a human needs other humans around them, because a human is a social creature and they just need other people around them to feel that fulfillment, or to, you know, function as a human is intended to. I think nature is something that is also really important for people, because we are connected to nature. We are part of nature, like not so much anymore as we used to, but still nature is all around us. And I mean, if you are going into a garden and you hear the birds and you feel like the wind, that is something that is really nice, and you like that, you know. That I think that's just something every human should do from time to time, to go out into nature, because it's just a really great resource to refill energy and to get away from stuff and to calm down. Yes.
What came to my mind about the nature topic is, I think that nature built us humans in a way that we are made to be happy, because nature built us so that we would survive. And if you imagine like Stone Age people, then we can all imagine that a happy Stone Age person is way more likely to survive than a sad and depressed person. And thus I think that we are all created to be happy, and I think happiness is our default state. I think we aren't supposed to fall into a sad state or into a neutral state. I think we are supposed to fall into a happy state when we are just doing what we were supposed to be doing. Also, if you look at animals, of course, we can't really tell if animals are happy or not. And I think also science is not really conclusive about that. But every time you mentioned like birds singing, also if you look at a dog or at animals that are hunting or wild animals that are just living in the woods and doing their stuff and you just encounter them and you see them for a few seconds, I feel like those animals look like they are happy because they are just doing what they are supposed to be doing and what nature gave them to do. And I want to add here that depression also makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint, because if you, for example, don't have enough to eat, or if a catastrophe killed half of your tribe, it probably makes sense evolutionary that you fall into a depression and you are not that active, which means you don't use up that much energy and you can remain in that state until there is more food available again, for example. So I think depression also makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint, but it's not supposed to be our default state. It's supposed to be an extreme that we, or like that our ancestors might have needed at some point to survive a really tough period of time. But when everything is working out, when they went out hunting and they made fire to prepare their food and they were around the other people of the tribe and they were around their families, I think they were supposed to be happy and they naturally fell into that state of being happy. And in my experience, that's also what happens when we are out in nature, that we get back into our default environment, and thus we also fall back into our default state. And that doesn't mean that we have to hunt out there or that we have to gather food out there, but just being in nature and breathing fresh air and also walking around, I think that physical exercise is also an extremely important part of that default environment. And when we are within that, then we fall into that default state of being happy and experiencing joy. And when we are not in nature, in our modern world, we are mostly surrounded by technology. And that is also something that, from an evolutionary standpoint, our brains are not capable of processing. And we are not supposed to live in that way. Because, for example, we are digitally surrounded by millions or even billions of people at the same time. And we are not capable of processing that. But when we are out in nature, maybe with our family or with a few friends, then that's a social circle that we are evolutionarily prepared to handle. And thus, that also is part of that natural environment, which leads again to that default state of happiness. That's what came to my mind when you were talking about the nature.
To my mind came also in the beginning of Inside Out. Do you remember when Riley is born? The first emotion that she's feeling is joy, which is really interesting because the first thing that child experiences is happiness. And I think that's a really interesting, you know, just to think about that. The first thing that was important for the movie was that the child experienced joy. And when she's really little, like Riley, she experiences a lot of joy. And I think children have that in a more common way, like their connection back to that emotion is, I think, sometimes easier to access as an adult. Because if you give them something and they enjoy that, then they are happy, you know? Sometimes then they are a little bit sad because they're hungry or something didn't go the way that they wanted, but generally they are, their main default is like happiness or like contentment, you know? They're content the way they are and thus they are happy. So.
I have an interesting question about that came to my mind, and I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't know if scientists know the answer to that, but I would like to explore it a bit with you, because what you basically said is that for children it's easier to step into that happiness and to, the way I phrased it earlier, to get into that default state than for adults. And my question now is, do you think that's the way how nature intended that? Like, do you think 100,000 years ago, when people were hunting and gathering food, do you think it was also the case that the children were happier than the adults? Or do you think that shifted due to our modern culture, that it's more difficult for adults to step into that happy state?
Oh, it's a really interesting question. Okay, we are just rambling off our heads now. No scientific grounds here whatsoever. It's just theorizing. I think yes and no. Let me explain. Because when you get older, you're like the construct of your feelings and the construct of the emotions you feel are just more complex, you know? You feel a lot more emotions. It's not your primary emotions anymore. It's like layered with other emotions too. So I think the whole thing in of itself gets more complicated and more complex, and thus it also gets more layered. And I feel like to then feel happiness or to feel that joy can also be layered through other emotions, you know? Like, in one way, it could amplify it because you have more ways to express that happiness. But on the other hand, if it gets really complicated, then it's also more layered to get back to that emotion. You know what I mean? So that way gets more complicated. But I think in another sense, yes, because the way we live today is also a really complex world, you know? Like with the technology, then we have societies, we have different cultures, we are in connection with all of these things, with different cultures, with globalization, and stuff like that. And I think like a caveman or a cavewoman, they didn't have that kind of complex world they were living in. And thus, it's much easier when you don't know all of the other stuff around you, you know? And you don't get influenced by all of the other things around you that much. Then it's really easier for you, because when you have a good meal and your family is with you, then you are happy because your baselines are met with. And you don't have to worry about what is the country XY doing right now and like climate change and stuff like that, because they didn't have a concept of stuff like that. So I think with the complexity of things, it gets harder to find happiness or to go back to that default state of happiness, because everything gets layered and just, you know, a little bit thicker to get back to the baselines.
something that I thought of in the beginning was like that adults are carrying more responsibility. And my, like, while I was asking you that question, my, like, part of my mind was already working on the question, or like I took as a baseline the fact that in our modern world adults are carrying more responsibility than children. And I was contemplating, was that the case a few thousand years ago as well? And while you were talking, I thought about that, and it helped me to imagine myself in that early culture. And I think one big difference is that you also mentioned that word of worrying. And I think all of the modern adults are to some extent worrying about the future. And I think that's something that wasn't really the case in early mankind. Like, as you said, I don't know that from a scientific standpoint. I know that some native cultures, they figure time differently than we do. Like, we think about time like a line, and it starts with our birth and it ends with our death. And we, every now and then when we get older, we imagine ourselves on that line and we realize that we are getting further to the end. And I know that there are some native cultures that understand time more as a circle. It's like, it's spring, then it gets warmer, then it gets colder again, and at some point it's spring again. And like, they travel, for example, to the south, and then the temperature changes and they travel to the north again. And it's like, also from a day-to-day context, it's like they go out hunting and gathering, then they prepare that food, and at some point it's evening, and then they go to sleep. But it's, I could imagine that the general understanding of time was more as a circle and less like a line. And thus there also wasn't really the worrying what would come when I go further down the line, because you're just on the same circle. You've experienced that before, so it's not like you're worrying about anything.
And it's also more connected back to nature, because then, like, they travel with the seasons and they get a food and go hunting with the animals who also go with the seasons. So it's a cycle, you know? But for us today, I think it's more like a, sometimes it's like really disconnected to seasons, because the only thing that we really have with seasons is like, we have summer, in summer we have vacation, then we have the spring where everything gets warmer, we have winter with Christmas, and we have like the fall with like Halloween, and in America Thanksgiving and stuff. I forgot Easter, but it's not that we go with the flow of the seasons anymore, you know? And then it's really different, because it's just in 1 year I want to be there and there and that and that company. It's like really disconnected from anything else that happens around us nature-wise, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. It's like we have our holidays, both in the sense, I think that's, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's then the, is it the American interpretation that that's the time when you go on vacation? Like both in the way of when do I go to vacation, and also in the sense of special events like religious holidays. So that is also for us modern humans a circle, but then it's like most of our life is more determined by those longer perspectives, with like, where do I want to be in 1 year, and where do I want to be in 5 years, and how should I develop my skills in my career, and how much money do I want to make, and how do I manage that? Like, for when you get older, at some point you're thinking about, I imagine that, I haven't thought about retiring yet, but I'm pretty sure that people at some point think about that. And then it's like the question, what do I do with my career before I retire and stuff like that? And how will things look like afterwards? And I could imagine that a caveman or a cavewoman, they weren't bothered with that, because it's like, imagine a caveman who is capable of hunting a buffalo. Then they're like, well, next year when I'm here again, I will hunt buffaloes. But the nature is stable enough that I don't have to adapt to that. I don't have to develop new skills so that I'm next year still capable of hunting buffaloes. In our modern world, it's like, I can handle the current technology, but what if the technology is completely different in 5 years and I have to keep up with that to stay in my career and to still be on top of that? But back then it was like, you develop those skills and your environment is determined by nature and not by human technology, and thus it's way more stable and you don't have to constantly adapt to that.
I also think that back then there was a balance, you know? I think also with like the Middle Ages and stuff, there was still a certain balance that you could go with, like the seasons, and the seasons determined a lot of your workflow and such. But nowadays it feels more like we're completely out of balance in some accounts. And then it's more layered, you know? Then it's also not, will I be able to go, or is the technology, am I able to go with the technology that is there when I'm ready with my degree? But it's also what happens with the heat waves, what happens with flooding, what happens with like economic things around us, what happens with, you know, with money flow, what happens with politics, what, you know, that's so much layering. And then it's, you're constantly in a loop for worrying. And I think the default state today is more like, worry about future, worry about, you know, but also like really abstract sometimes. Because it's like, then what am I doing in 50 years? Well, I'm sorry to break it to you, but it's really hard to think about the next 50 years. Like, take it down a notch, just think about the next couple of days, and then you can think about what do you want to do this week, and you know, but it's always these big complex things. And I feel like we also worry about a lot of things that we can't yet even, like, not even see in the near future, you know, like for example, if we would think about now how to retire in 60 years. Wait, that doesn't make sense. But you know what I mean. So, yeah. But I think that's also something that is new. That it's so much layering with a lot of things, because it's just a little bit out of balance, and now we are working against nature. But nature is doing its own thing, and then sometimes it feels like everything is a bit retaliating against each other, you know? It's like a push and shove thing, not a balancing. I go with that and the flow is like this, and I go with the flow. It's more like, ooh, we have to do something against something. It's also more aggressive, you know? So,
when you mentioned the balance aspect, I had to think of it in a sense, like, you can also interpret the balance aspect on different layers here, but I thought about the layer that many people nowadays struggle with workaholism. And I think, or I want to mention the theory here, that money really tipped mankind off balance. And bear with me, like, first of all, I don't want to talk down on capitalism or anything. It's just like something that came to mind, that if you imagine a caveman who hunts buffaloes, imagine the scenario, he goes out and he kills a buffalo, and then of course he could go out and kill another one, but probably a buffalo is enough to feed the tribe for a few days. And if he kills a second buffalo, until the first one is eaten, the second one has rotted away. So it doesn't make sense to kill a second buffalo. You first have to get down, like, get back to the tribe, settle down, prepare the buffalo, eat it, enjoy it, and then when you see it's almost eaten up, then you can think about, where do I get the next buffalo from? But you can't just create and store more and more of that, because it will rot away. And I think before money was invented, food was like the most important currency. And food was what you had at home and what you stored. And with the creation of money, you would start gathering money and you would store your value as money. And then when you have the possibility to make more money, you can seize that, because you can just store the money and it won't rot away. And I could imagine that, as I said, tipped our species off balance, because we can just make more and more money without immediately seeing that it doesn't make sense. Because with food, you immediately realize, just rots away, it doesn't make sense, I will stop that. But with money, even though it might be detrimental in the long term to completely focus on that, you don't see in the short term how little sense it makes. You might only realize that in the long term. And thus it's so much harder to keep the balance, because you are not, like, you don't have a natural threshold that you can't cross, but you can go as far as you want to, and you have to set your own boundaries for that. And that makes it way more challenging. Could you follow the point I was making?
I could follow. Goodly, no, that's not a word, but yes, I could follow.
And, you know, I nonetheless think that it's really smart that we have money nowadays, and it makes a lot of things easier. But I think the important part to realize here is that you have to set your own boundaries, that there are no natural boundaries anymore that tell you, now you have enough money, it doesn't make sense to make more of it, it will be detrimental for you. But you have to reflect yourself, where are the boundaries you should set, and how do you prevent yourself from going beyond that?
Yeah, it's all about balance and how you find the balance in all of it.
Okay, let's go back to a more practical perspective, because I think that was really interesting to have that perspective, but I also find it's little useful for our day-to-day life to get that perspective. So let's get a more practical view and think about, what are the concrete activities that we could or should engage in that make us more happy? What do you think about that?
So I think I want to go into another direction real quick. Like, I think that, like, hobbies also make us happy, and also, like, the thing with exploring and creating makes us also happy. And I think it's also instilled in us in some kind of way that we want to go out, like, we want to travel, we want to see the world, we want to see what is beyond the town, the village, the city we are living in, and we want to explore different cultures and see different spaces on this planet. And I think that's also something that makes happy, you know, to explore, to go out, but also to create stuff. I mean, there's an abundance of art and culture and stuff like that. Like, you can go from food over everything, what people create and what is really nice and, you know, is something that makes one happy to either engage in it or be part of it in also creating.
And I think with all those aspects, we can also really see the difference between children and adults in our modern culture. Because for children, it's really easy to, and also really natural to just explore, to try out new things, and also to create things. Because in my experience, when a child, for example, wants to draw something, it just starts drawing. But as an adult, we tend to have those thoughts. What if it looks silly? And what if it doesn't make sense? What if it doesn't evolve in a way that you imagine it? What if you realize that you can't really draw what you had imagined? What if other people see it and laugh at you or stuff like that? Also, sometimes, like, that happened to me before, that I wanted to draw something, but I just either had no idea what to draw, or I had too many ideas and couldn't decide what to draw. And I think that comes much more easy to children, that when you tell them draw something, they just draw something, or when they have an idea, they just draw it, and they don't care if it looks really nice or not. They just draw it, and then it's there, and then they don't care what other people think about that. They just try it out. And I think for them it's more about figuring out, did I enjoy the process, and not how does the outcome look like. So I think that's a really big difference that makes it much more easy for children to experience all of that.
I also think a child can so easily tap into that imagination part. Like, I think every one of us has seen children before, like playing children before, and they have like 5 cars and I don't know how many other like Duplo blocks or something like that. And then they tell you a story about what they are doing right now. And they tell you what adventure they just have while they are sitting on the floor with nothing around them other than the things they have. But they are so imaginative that every day for them is an adventure because they make it one. You know, because then it's boring and then they just decide for something else and then they go and then they're like pirates on a big ship doing whatever, or they're like in a jungle exploring a lot of other stuff. But they don't need much to have that kind of imagination and to also feel like it's an adventure. They don't need guidance for that. They just have it in them, which are all always find really interesting, because for us adults it's so hard to tap back into that, because then it's silly and you basically have no time and you have to have a coherent story, and you know, like all of the thoughts around it just hinder you to just unlock it and have that imagination.
That's so true. I'm always amazed by children who have some building blocks and they just put 2 or 3 together and it doesn't look like anything. And then they tell you what that's supposed to mean. And they sound like they can really see that within that structure. Even though this, like, also from an objective standpoint, that structure doesn't make any sense. But they just put a few pieces together and tell you, that's a ship now, and they are sailing here on the floor to some destination and they can imagine all of that without having any realistic visualizations for that or something like that. And yes, as an adult, we often really struggle with being like that and with imagining things. We are, like, I think also some adults struggle with reading fiction because it's so difficult for them to imagine the story that is written out. But with a story that is explained to you, it's still so much easier to imagine that than with just a few building blocks that you have. And even that is, for some adults, really challenging. Because, let's be honest, we're also used to having movies and to watching videos, and there we don't need much imagination, because everything is shown to you through several senses. And we don't have to come up with pictures or sounds on our own, because that's just created for us and given to us. And maybe we just unlearn how to use our imagination for stuff like that.
That's actually quite sad, to be honest, that you lose that over time. But the cool thing is you can just get it back. Like, you can train yourself to get stuff like that back and to tap into the imagination and to have a little bit more adventure in your day-to-day life. And I think that's also something that is, you know, a child has much routine because they go to kindergarten or they go to elementary school or something like that. But then they have a lot of free time and they fill it with play. Or, like, most of the times they fill it with play. That should be the case. But we as adults, what do we do in our free time? Like, we work, we have work time. And then we have to make food. Then we have to eat that food. We have to get new food. We have to care for our children and our people around us. Like, we have so much to do. We can't just sit down and be like, and now we do a play session for 3 hours. But we can do it in our vacation time. And I think that's why we all think vacation time is such a great time for us, because that's where we don't have those responsibilities. We can just push them away and worries and stuff. Then it's only important to be on a beach with your kids or, like, with your significant other or family, and then you build a big castle in the sand and you do whatever, you know. That's where you get those glimpses of childhood back. I think that's why we like vacation time so much, because there we can just be and do stuff that makes us happy and do stuff that fulfills us and to, you know. So, yeah.
You also mentioned exploring earlier. And I think it's really interesting, because I could imagine that most adults, when they think about exploring something, they think about those really big events, like going into vacation and going to another country and exploring that. Or we think about those Indiana Jones movies and we think about exploring a city that is thousands of years old and no one was there for thousands of years, and now we are exploring that. But if you're looking at a child and observe the child while it is exploring, how we imagine that as adults is kind of ridiculous, because a child, like, it's exploring in your own garden and it finds new stuff and it's amazed, and then it finds, like, an earthworm and it's amazed by that. And I think one big part is that we at some point just explored most of the stuff around us, and thus it's not really exploring anymore, because we, like, we have seen a few hundred earthworms in our lives, and then it's not really so interesting anymore. But I think the other part is that we also stop appreciating that. I think if we looked at an earthworm really, really closely, we would be amazed by how that thing moves and how it exactly looks like and how it's made up. But we're just like, oh, that's a worm. That's boring. That's nothing special. But we don't even really wonder if it's special, and we don't try to investigate until it is special to us. Also, if we are walking in our own town, I think if we really looked around and really appreciated our surroundings, we could really find that appreciation for it there. But we are so convinced that there is nothing to explore that we don't realize what there is to explore. And then we think we need to have a vacation and we need to travel to faraway places to have that exploring, because we don't see the parts we could explore just in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I think the word you dropped in there, which I was thinking about, was the word wonder. I think a child just naturally has it. Everything is wonderful for them. And it's like really full of magic and full of, you know. But as an adult, yeah, as you said, you know. But I think we get that back in other ways. Because like a child with 2 years can't yet really engage with a lot of mediums that we engage with as an adult. For example, reading. We can journal, where we can find a lot of wonder and a lot of stuff we learn about ourselves. Reading, we can read about worlds and things that people just made up in their mind. And that can bring a lot of wonder. Or movies, for example, can also bring a lot of wonder. But I think we outsource it a little bit to other things, because our just day-to-day life and our surroundings are not wonderful anymore, because they're just, well, it's just a pond. But the pond is, you know, it's smelly and it's a lot of work, but it's not like, oh, there's a fish and there's another fish and oh, there's an algae. But it's more like, it has algaes again, now I have to get them out or something. You know, but we outsource it more to other places.
Did you, with outsourcing, did you mean what I was referring to always imagine those faraway places? Or were you referring to something else?
Referring to that you're part of it, you know, that to find wonder you go into another country. And to have that wonder you're reading about a fantasy world. Or you're watching an Indiana Jones movie. You know, it's not your garden anymore or your town. But it's, you have to go, quote unquote, you have to go a lot farther away than you used to.
Yeah, I understand, yes. And I think what comes with that is that we are also looking for something external to evoke that wonder. But we are not really looking for that wonder in the things we already have around us. I think that's also part of what you meant.
Yeah, it is, but I also want to like drop that in here. I don't think traveling is bad, you know, to learn about other cultures, to learn about other places, to go there, to experience that. I don't think that's bad. I also don't think that watching movies and reading is bad. Well, we all know I love reading, so that would be absurd. It's just really interesting to think about it, as to what the motivation behind it could be, you know?
Yeah, I would like to give a comparison here, because for children, like, I think both of us did that when we were children. We were in vacation at the sea, and we were collecting, like, shells on the beach. We still do that nowadays. And we also, like, we were also collecting parts of crabs at the beach, and we put them into a box, and after a few days, like, we have experienced that independently from each other. We didn't know each other back then, but we told each other the stories about it, and we've realized that we actually did a quite similar thing there, because we both collected parts of crabs on the beach, and we... Oh, yours were shells.
Yeah,
okay, but the effect was similar, because we put them into a box, and then after a few days it got really smelly, because there were still, like, with parts of crabs, it's, for an adult, it's really obvious. But also with shells, like, if they are still closed and there's still the living animal in it, and you just put it out of the water and in a box and then maybe into the sun where it's really hot, of course that animal will die at some point. And then we both had the experience that we collected something and it got smelly and you had to put it out again, like we had to scatter it at the beach again. But it's like, the point that I actually wanted to make is, for children it's of course really nice to have vacation at the beach and to gather stuff and to explore that. But for a child, it's, I would say, about as amazing as just going into the woods next to your house and just gathering some branches or some other stuff that you find just in your close woods and to do something with those. But I feel like for an adult, you don't appreciate the wood next to your house anymore, but you rely on those special events and special vacations to have those experiences. But for children, it's like, it's really nice to have something special, and it gives you something that you could not have experienced otherwise. But when they don't have it, it's not like they sit at home and they're like, oh, I'm already really looking forward to next year when we go on vacation again, and until then I will just do my school stuff and it will be fine. But they will be like, yeah, it was really nice at the beach, I go into the woods now and explore there. So they, of course, they appreciate those events, but they don't have to rely on those to have those feelings.
You know what one can hear out of your talking right now?
What can they hear out?
That you live next to the woods. But, like, not every person has that, you know? So it was like, I was just like thinking, yes, you're talking like a town child, like a Dorfkind in German. Because, you know, there's a lot of nature around you. So I found it really interesting and a little bit funny that you were like, and then you go into the wood next to your house. And I'm like, what are you doing when you are like in a big city like Berlin or something? There's like, you have to walk a lot to get to woods there.
Yeah, that's true. Like, the house where I grew up, there's literally a wood directly next to it. So you're definitely right, yes. But the point, like, I hope that also came across, that you don't, like, it's not about the woods. It's about when they are at home, they are just exploring what is right around the corner. And for some people, that's woods. For other people, that might be a small garden or a plant that they have on their balcony, or maybe the street next to the house where they play with other children or anything like that. But wherever they are, they find something to explore. And that's as an adult, that's sometimes really interesting and really difficult to wrap your mind around, because for you it seems so boring that you might start wondering, how can they be exploring that and how can they be amazed by that? But I think we all can learn to be amazed by that as well. We just have to find a different perspective to that.
Yeah, true, true. So, what can one do to find that amazement, wonder, adventure, exploring kind of type way back to happiness in everyday, today life? You go.
I think one important step is to just look around you. Because I've also experienced that. Sometimes I walk through the town here because I have to get something. And while I'm walking, I'm already thinking about what do I want to do next? And what else do I have to do? And what will I do once I come home? But I'm not really paying attention to what is around me. So what I recommend as a first step is to literally just look around you, and when you are walking somewhere or when you're driving somewhere or also when you're waiting somewhere, just look around and see what you can find there. And in my experience, like, I'm often surprised by what I can find, what I haven't realized before, because sometimes there's a way I walk frequently or I drive frequently. But when I start consciously looking around while I'm on that way, I realize things that I hadn't realized before. So that's really interesting. And I think that's the essence of exploring. It's like figuring out what is there and then trying to gather more information about that. And of course, it starts with actually observing what there is around you. What else can we do to improve that and to get better with that?
I think it's also really important to be mindful about it, you know, to actually be in that moment and be like, okay, and now I'm doing that, now I'm looking around myself a little bit more closely. I think another thing that you could do is just look what children are doing around you. What do they find interesting? What are they looking at? And then you can also just look a little bit closer. Maybe you find a little duck or something, you know? And then you can just observe how other people, and especially children, react to the world around them. And then just try to also let go of, like, oh, this is silly. And, you know, just let go of it, because a child doesn't think it's silly. And most of the people will not think that it's silly. It's just what you think other people will think when you do something. And then just to try that out and to lean more into that side of you. And when it gets sparked, then just, you know, let yourself be carried away from it a little bit and see where you end up.
I think children can really inspire us with what we've been talking about here. And another aspect they can inspire us is with our fantasy. We've also talked about that, and our imagination. Because most adults at some point have the honor to play with a child. And I chose that word honor because I think it is an honor, even though it's sometimes really hard and it's exhausting and it can be really annoying. But I think it can remind us, as you just said, it can remind us of how we were at some point and what we can get back if we work on that. And another thing is the imagination. Because I think when an adult is playing with a child, most of the times they think, well, I'm here to support that child, but I'm not really here to have fun with that. So I'm just sitting here, and when the child needs something, I will help it with that. But we also don't really try to understand what it is that they are playing and what they are seeing within their toys, and how it seems alive to them. And I think when we are playing with the child, we can use that opportunity to try to figure out what is that they see in there, and how do they imagine that. And then we can use that as inspiration to get back that imagination. And not just trying to support them while playing, but trying to really play with them and to get on the same page and to imagine the same things that the child is imagining there. And I think that's a really great exercise to win parts of that back.
What else can make one happy?
Another part is also physical exercise, because we've also talked about that, of the natural environment of us humans, and that is putting us into the default state. And when you investigate what cave people used to do, you will figure out that they moved a lot. Like, I think I've heard some numbers at some point, and I think that it was normal for women that they walked about 20 kilometers per day, and it was normal for men to walk up to 40 or 50 kilometers every day. Nowadays, if you're a bit into hiking, it's like, I think you will imagine it really challenging to go on a hike for 50 kilometers in one day. Also, if you're a runner, like, that's a marathon every day. Of course, they didn't run it, but you understand what I mean. Or like, not like, probably they, like, they weren't running a marathon. That's what I want to say here, but probably, or maybe they were running parts of that. So moving their body was completely natural for them and was an extremely important part in their lives. And when you look around how people are living their lives nowadays, moving our body is not that natural to us anymore. Like, not in the way that they moved their bodies back then. Because back then, basically their work was to go hunting, and they were just walking and running through the woods or wherever they were for most of that time. And nowadays, when we are, like, big parts of the work we are doing is just in front of a computer. And even commuting back and forth to work, most people use their cars for that, so not even there they are really moving their bodies anymore. And I think we, like, part of that reconnecting to nature is also reconnecting with our bodies. And of course that can be within a gym, even though the gym is not a natural environment. But when you're moving your body, you are creating that nature within you, and you are reconnecting to nature, even though you might be in a big city and you might be in a building, in a gym, but you are reconnecting to nature because your body is nature. And when you train it and when you are engaging in exercise, then you are reconnecting to your body and thus also to nature. So I think that's another really important part, or yeah, like a really important building block of happiness.
Another thing is food, I think. Like, get your body the nutrients that it needs, like, with everything that it needs, and good meals and filling meals and, you know, something like that can also make one happy. To have a good meal, to have something to eat, and to have something to eat that your body can profit from. I think that's also, like, your body feels then really good afterward, after you gave it something really nice to eat. And when you enjoyed the food while you were eating it, that also makes happy because you know, you also reconnect to a lot of things there. You reconnect to your culture when you do something from your culture. You reconnect to other cultures when you do something from another culture. But you also connect to basic things like your nutrition, stuff like that. But also the thing that combines us, which is food. Like, food can bring people together. And that is also part of that. Somehow, even though you are alone in your dorm and you eat it alone, it's still something that connects us beyond the people who are around you in that moment, which is something really nice. Which brings me to another thing, like also to nurture your mind. With, for example, journaling, just put stuff out of yourself, to worries and stuff, to write that down, to have a good cycle of it and to build a cycle of it. Worry and stuff gets out and you put stuff in, you know, on the other side. You learn about new things, you read nonfiction books, you learn about all sorts of things. But also with like fiction books and stuff like that, you rekindle that imagination. And like, storytelling is so old for us humans. It's also something that reconnects back to baselines, because stories are what made us humans in our societies. So something really nice to also dare reach beyond and reconnect to another person through pages.
And I think all of that has also something to do with exploring, because with food, for example, we can, as you said, we can explore other cultures by trying out food they used to make, or we can, even in our own city, we can explore new restaurants, for example, and try that out. And we can also explore our own bodies, because we can explore what kind of food works well for me and what kind of food drains my energy and makes me feel really exhausted afterwards. But we have to pay attention to that, and we have to be conscious about that, and we have to treat food more than just energy delivery, because the way we are living in our modern age pushes us towards rushing eating and to just do that because we need to put something into our bodies, but without being curious about that and without paying attention to that and without enjoying that. But if we are doing that consciously, we can get so much more out of that. And also with the connecting with other people, as you said, food can bring people together, and I think we can also use that as a tool to get some quality time with our loved ones by scheduling meal times with them.
Yeah, I think that's also a big part, to have people around you with which you can connect and have a good time with them. And that also nurtures us, you know, and that makes us happy. And in the long run, at some point, you will figure out what makes you happy. And what are the little things that makes you happy, or that make you happy? And then even a really, really shitty day can have a lot of those happy moments in them. And a really dark period in our life can also have a lot of those happy things in them, because you can find it everywhere, and you can, you know, you can pluck at it a little bit, and then you get more of it, and then you find a food, like something to eat you really like, and then you eat that, even though you're feeling really bad right now. But then you have something to, you know, that makes you happy for that time. And then you can build on that.
Another thing that we've also been mentioning before in that episode is the part of creating new things. And of course, work is an important part for most of the adults. But I think to really be happy, we need a work that is aligned with what we are supposed to be doing. Because everyone has some kind of purpose and something that they are excited about. And I think our purpose doesn't necessarily has to be our work. So I've heard that quote, your passion doesn't have to be your paycheck. So if you're passionate about something, you can do that on the side. You don't have to make that your job. But your job has to be aligned in some extent. If your passion, for example, is to help nature to recover and to fight climate change, and you're working for a company that is depleting natural resources, then you're not aligned with that. Doesn't mean that you have to find a job that really goes with your purpose and that you can put your whole purpose into your job, but at least it should go together well. And if it doesn't go together well, you will feel that, and you will feel depleted yourself, and you will feel unhappy. So I think finding a work that you enjoy doing and that is aligned with you is really important. And then you will also tap into that creation, because at work we are supposed to create something. And if that's aligned, then you are also creating something that makes you happy to create that.
Also with like your free time and hobbies. You know, if you don't know what your hobby could be, then just try other stuff out and try everything out that you can get your hands on. I've seen a really, really cool like little video series on Insta. There's like one girl and she has like the series with like trying out hobbies badly, where she doesn't have the goal to have the most beautiful thing in the end, but to have tried out the hobby. Like that the hobby is the goal, not the outcome. And I think that's a really nice approach to that. To just try something out and then, you know, to actually tell yourself, I'm doing it badly right now because I only want to know if it could be a hobby for me or not. Not that I have the most beautiful thing in the end and like without the perfectionism in it, which I find really, really nice. So I think I'm always happy when I see her reels in my timeline. I'm like, oh, she tries another hobby. I'm wondering what she thinks of it in the end. So, yes.
And I think something else that is often mixed up in our consumer society is that practicing a hobby is about the activity you're engaged in and not the resources that you have for it. For example, if you would like to try out painting, but like some people enjoy painting, but they are not good with it. And especially if you're new to that, you probably won't be really good with that. But let's say you want to start painting, or maybe start again painting because you used to enjoy that as a child, but maybe you're afraid of judgment. And it's really difficult for you to actually paint something, then practicing that hobby doesn't mean buying stuff for it and buying high quality pencils and buying a great variety of colors, but never actually painting. Because practicing that hobby means that you just paint something. And it doesn't matter what kind of pen you use for that. It matters that you do it, yes. And doing it with poor resources is much better than having amazing resources but never using them. And you can also, one thing that I've learned is it's much better to start small, and when you realize that you're enjoying it, then you can scale your resources. But it can be really bad to first get all the resources and try to get the perfect resources, but never actually starting the real thing.
I think the word that dropped here, which is really important to just take out and observe a little bit closer, is the word perfect. Nothing you create has to be perfect. No book is completely perfect. No story is completely perfect. No painting is completely perfect. But that's the part that makes human. The not perfect in it. Like the thing that you connect to. The thing that you look at your art and afterwards you're like, wow, that is beautiful. It doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful or to be amazing or to be whatever you think it has to be. Because creating is not about having something done perfectly. It's about having done something and having something that is part of you and that comes from you. You don't have to do it perfect because you are not perfect and you don't have to be perfect. Nobody has to be perfect and nothing has to be perfect because that's just human. And if it would be perfect, then something would be missing. And that's the imperfection that needs to be part of that thing you create. For others to also relate, but for yourself to relate to it, you know?
And I want to use as an example for that the exact podcast that we are currently recording, because we also don't do it perfectly. Like we don't speak English perfectly, so we put in some mistakes, and we are also not planning out the episode perfectly, so sometimes it's probably a bit screwed off because we just switch between different topics and we don't exactly finish one line before we start another, and then we get back to the first one again at some point. But our purpose is not to create a perfect episode. Our purpose is to help our listeners to figure new things out and to learn something new. And we've learned that it's also really nice for us and that we are learning a lot while doing that. And thus it's good that we are not planning it out quote unquote perfectly, because the fact that we are improvising in between leads us to new learnings. So it's not like that was honestly my imagination when I thought about starting a podcast, that I just live my life for 1 week and I learn new things and I try out new things and I gather experiences, and then I pick out the most remarkable experience from that week and I talk about that in a podcast episode. And thus I create value during the week and then I pass on that value every Sunday. That's how I had imagined it. But what I've come to realize is that, of course, we are inspired by things we do and things we experience. But then when we talk about that and when we exchange some ideas about that, we also learn so much more about that and so many new things. And I think that's also an important part about creating something, that it's not like you just have that and you pass it on to someone else. But while you create it, you also get so much from that as well. And I think that's when you record a podcast, but also when you're working on a book or working on a painting, working on some other craftsmanship that you are engaged in, it's also always an aspect of it, what you get from that while you're working on it. And if you're doing something quote-unquote perfectly, this aspect that is for yourself is not there. And thus, it's good if it's not perfect, because that means that you got something from that as well.
True, true. I really like that aspect, that when it's not perfect, then you get something out of it. And I think that's also, you know, that's also for us in a podcast like that. Like, when were the moments that we got most of in podcast episode? Well, when we had like quarterly check-ins where we were like, our life is a mess and we have no idea how to juggle all of the stuff we are doing. But I think out of it came also a lot of value, not only for us, but also our listeners, because struggle is real and struggle is human. And it would have been so boring to listen to us. Like, I'm pretty sure it would have been also boring to talk about that and be like, yeah, the last 3 months, everything worked out fine. We did it. Every day was just perfect. Just as we planned. No, that's boring. Nobody wants to, you know, nobody wants to listen to something like that. And also to talk about it, you know. It's much more interesting to talk about why something is not working or why we struggle with something. Because out of that, we can learn how to overcome those struggles. And, you know, we can also pass on the knowledge how we overcame struggles. And, you know, it's not like our life is so much less busy and less messy. But I think out of that messiness comes also the connection, you know? We can relate to each other. We can be like, oh, we are all in that time together. And, you know, that also connects us again to ourselves, to each other, to our listeners. And I think that just makes human, you know? I like the word human.
I think that's also a really nice note to end this episode on.
Human.
Yeah, human. But also the whole creation part and not focusing on doing it perfectly. I think that's also really important learning here to take away from it. Is there anything else that you want to add before we jump to our prompt that we have prepared for today?
I think our key takeaways are really nice there. So we put down that happiness is findable everywhere. And I think now that we talked about children and how they find wonder and stuff like that, it's even more true. Like, it was true before, but a bit more abstract. I think now it's more... you can put your finger down on it. Something like that. And another one is that you can strive for it. But when you are striving for it, just start small. And then work up from that. You don't have to be like, oh, I want the happiest week of my life. Just start small with like, today I'm eating a good meal and I'm happy about it. Or just look into the mirror in the morning and be like, oh, you look happy today. You know, something like that. Or smile at yourself and be like, ah, I'm looking good. I'm looking happy there. So just do some little things and then work up from that.
Yeah, I have some thoughts about that that I also want to mention here. And that is, with that, strive for it and start small. The first thing that I want to hammer home here is that striving for it doesn't mean that you strive for specific outcomes that you believe will make you happy. Because if you're financially more or less secure, making way more money won't make you happy. So my experience and my recommendation is not to engage in a job you don't like to make money that might eventually will make you happy. Because what that means is that you strive for activities that you enjoy while you engage in those activities. Also with a hobby, for example, like if you enjoy painting something but you're not good with that, then don't strive for creating amazing pictures that you can sell or that people can praise you for, but strive for enjoying painting something. And if it doesn't look really good in the end, it doesn't matter, but strive for that enjoyment while you're doing those activities. But don't strive for some outcomes that you believe will make you happy, because unfortunately that's just not how happiness works, because it's not the outcomes that make us happy, but it's the activities. And something else that I want to add to that is that sometimes we have to choose activities that we know make us happy, but sometimes we have to find the happiness in activities that we engage in. For example, with a hobby, we usually know that that's something that we enjoy and that makes us happy. So we should find the time to engage in that more often. But we also have some responsibilities that we just can't really get around. So it makes sense to find the happiness in those activities. And even when we are doing chores, there is happiness findable. As you said, happiness is findable everywhere. So even with activities that we don't really enjoy, but we just have to do them, we should be looking for the happiness within it.
And the last point goes into the same hammering home thing that you just started, that happiness is not a destination, but it's a journey. And I think that goes into the same thing as you just said, that you don't have to achieve something and then you will be happy. It's happiness you find along the way. Like, it's when you are walking on a path, happiness is the flowers that grow on the sidewalk that you see, and the butterflies that fly over your head, and the bees who are eating from those flowers. It's not your destination when you finished your walk and you're back home or back at your car, but it's everything around you that you experience while you are on that walk.
Yeah, and something else that I've learned that came from the book The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is a really good book. But one learning that I want to pass on here is that when you are wondering what activity to engage in, you shouldn't ask yourself if you would like to have the outcome, but you should ask yourself if you would like to have the struggle to achieve the outcome. For example, I'm studying computer science currently, so I will use the example of coding a program. If you're wondering if you should program something, you shouldn't ask yourself, well, would I like to have a program that does certain things for me? But you should ask yourself, would I enjoy the struggle to find a nasty bug within that program and search for it for hours? And if you have a yes to the first question, would you like to have the outcome, then maybe it's worth it engaging in it. But if you have a yes to the second question, then you should definitely look deeper into that, because that might be something you could find a lot of joy in, because it's something most people find annoying. But if you can find joy in the problem, not only in the solution, but in the problem, then that might be something really valuable for you. And as always, we have a prompt prepared for you. And in fact, today we have two different kinds of prompts. The first one is a journaling prompt, because Simi was so kind to think of a journaling prompt because she knows how much I love journaling. And in fact, I came up with an action step, and we will just give you both, and you can do either one or both or none of it. That's your thing. And the journaling prompt is the question, what would you do with 1 week without any responsibility and appointments? Because that's just a nice way to find your passions and your goals, to not think about all the stuff you have to do, but to really get to the core of the stuff you want to do. And the action step that we want to give you is do something that makes you happy. As Simi said, strive for happiness and start small. And the best way to start small is to engage in an activity that you know makes you happy. And if you want to dive deeper into our recent episodes, we recommend to you episode number 47, Ever Been on a Balance Beam? Because we've also talked about balance in that episode, and we think it's an important aspect to happiness. But when you listen to that episode, you will be surprised what else that balance applies to. So you will hear from us in that episode or in the next one that comes out. Until then, bye bye.
Wait, hold up a second. I have to sign us off.
Yeah, I just signed myself off in advance. But of course, you can sign us off properly, please.
Okay, I will do that. And we have a new verse to it. Tim kindly lent it to us, so it is part of it now. Always be kind to others and yourself. Pick up a book from your shelf or library or audiobook or your ebook. Don't forget your water bottle, then your life will have full throttle. Go outside into nature, peace and harmony will greet you. Take out your journal and write to explore your unconscious mind.
And with that, finally, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.